One of our listeners, John Simmons from Lawrence, Kansas, recently wrote to us about his own love of science and exploration. When he was a little kid, John loved insects and reptiles, and he even turned his parents' basement into a natural history museum. And in ninth grade, at a Scholastic book fair, he came upon a story that set him on his path for life.
I found this book by Roy Chapman Andrews called Quest of the Snow Leopard. The cover had a group on an expedition carrying their packs hiking over a glacier in the interior of China. And it was written as a book for young boys. So each chapter, the heroes face certain death and manage to escape. And there's all these heroic exploits involving fierce animals and attacks by bandits and pirates. But the parts of the book I liked were where they explained what they did in camp, how they went out and collected small animals and fish and reptiles and amphibians, how they preserved them.
Each little animal was numbered and measured, total length, tail, and hind foot. Then the skin was stripped off, dusted with arsenic, and stuffed lightly with cotton.
And then when you get back to the lab, how you study them and what kinds of information you can get from studying these collections.
Collection in the field is exciting and interesting, but its importance lies in telling the scientific world what new facts the specimens show.
And that was what got me excited, was this, that the same person could go out and collect the animals and then go back and study them. You know, this just really grabbed me. And I read the book almost straight through when I got it. I was so excited about it. And I remember very well the night I finished. It was during the Christmas holidays. I was alone in the living room. I got to the end of the book. It was probably 1 or 2 in the morning. And I turned out the living room lights, and we had one of these Christmas trees that you had in the 60s with glow-in-the-dark icicles. And I was just overcome by the moment. And I remember looking at those icicles and swearing to myself that if people really did go on this kind of expedition, if you really could do this sort of thing, that is what I would do. So I told all my friends that was what I wanted to do when I grew up, and of course they laughed at me and said, when was the book written? Well, it was written in 1951, the year I was born. And they said, and when was the story set? And which actually set in 1916. And they said, museums don't do that anymore. And I was crushed. Eventually, I set off for college and had the incredible fortune my freshman year to get a job in the Natural History Museum. Working in the Division of Herpetology, which is where they study amphibians and reptiles. And I met their real scientists who went out and had real adventures. And the first thing I noticed was they were not swashbucklers. They didn't wear the fancy hats and the safari suits. They looked really ordinary. My sophomore year, to my amazement, one day the curator walked in and said, how would you like to go live in the Amazon for a year? So that took me a nanosecond to think it over, and I said, absolutely. I lived at a field station for a year, and we would go out and walk trails every night. We recorded a lot of data for each specimen we collected. I learned to preserve things. I learned an enormous amount. Eventually, I wound up writing a book on the subject called Herpetological Collecting and Collections Management, which is the only guide to how to go out and make scientific collections of amphibians and reptiles. The ninth grade age me would say I have definitely lived out the dream I'd wanted to live out. I have done most of the things I had wanted to do and many things I had never imagined. I had never imagined being stalked by a jaguar or being in a voodoo ceremony or living in a haunted house. These were just things that I hoped might happen. But I prefer to think of myself as more of a scholar than that, a scholar who happens to have some adventures along the way.
John Simmons recently retired as the collection manager of the Natural History Museum at the University of Kansas. He's now off to do some more exploring on his own. Jenny Lawton produced our story. We would love to hear if some book or song or movie or work of art set you on an unexpected path in life. Tell us about it at studio360.org. And while you're there, you can leave us comments, you can subscribe to our weekly newsletter, or to our free podcast of the show. And that's it for this week's show. Thanks very much for listening, and I hope you'll listen again next week. Studio 360 is produced by WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International. Our story about music in space was produced with the help of Arts Edge, the educational website of the Kennedy Center in Washington. Studio 360's production team includes
Julie Burstein,
Vital Malad,
David Krasnow,
Michelle Siegel,
Derek John,
Jenny Lawton,
Pike Medinowski,
Sarah Lilly,
Kevin Ryan,
Jillian Goodman,
Ben Conniff.
And our theme music is by David Van Tiegum.
Studio 360's series on creativity and science is supported in part by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation. Studio 360 is funded in part by Ken and Lucy Lehman, supporting CARE in its efforts to alleviate global poverty, on the web at care.org, and SCG, whose charitable resources support FJC, a foundation of donor-advised funds, online at fjc.org, and the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art.
PRI, Public Radio International.
Next time in Studio 360...
I got a chocolate bar.
I got a quarter.
I got 5 pieces of candy. What did you get, Charlie Brown?
I got a rock.
Candy!
I got a rock.
Deconstructing Charles Schulz's Peanuts, next time in Studio 360,
I got a rock.
From PRI.